Well, it's movie day. Watching a movie at Holden, it kind of feels like cheating. I don't know. We're really supposed to do this. They have all the great things. Yeah, watching a movie at Holden feels a little like cheating. A little like.
Every week.
Oh, I know. But like, my kid cannot really access screens the whole time, right? Except for this, or, you know, when they watch a movie night with the kids. So you appreciate it more, right? So welcome. It's day four of sessions together for those of us who have been here this week. Thank you for coming back again. If you are anyone else just first time, just here for the first time, my name's Anna Marie Vegan, and I'm trying to do something a little different each day. And so it may seem strange that now the fourth day is when I'm trying to unpack what racism is, and Michael and Mark have done a bit of this already as well in their sessions. But I really want to show you racism after I define it, and that's why we're going to watch portions of The House We Live In, which is from a PBS series called Race, The Power of an Illusion. So this is our work for today, and I want to ask your permission. And again, if you're just coming in, yesterday we did Janet Helms' typology on stages of white identity formation. This is a little self-reflection inventory you can do. I ran out last time, but I have made more copies. And we also have plenty of copies of the resources for Beyond Holden things that you can take. So we could just quickly define racism and move straight into the movie. It's going to be about 25 minutes long. But would it be okay with you, because I'm such a fanatic and I want you to know about other examples of racism, could I take about 10 minutes to show you some other examples as well? Is that going to...
Sure.
That means we might have a little less discussion time on the film itself. So I want you to close your eyes and just see what you see in your mind's eye. When you see in your mind, what do you see in your mind when you hear the words racism and racist? Just close your eyes and take a minute. And what comes in to view? By any chance, did this image come up?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So this is certainly one. How about this one?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Anybody envision these two gentlemen?
Mm-hmm.
Roy Moore, Louisiana. Steve King, U.S. House Representative from Iowa. Been in the news. How about this person? I said yesterday, and I showed you some slides yesterday from the Pew Research Center, showing that there's a real racial divide still in this country between white and black Americans, understanding our current occupant of the White House as a racist or not. And it's true also when you don't just look at white and black people or people of color and white people, but particularly white Christians are more okay with this individual than Christians of color. So those slides are from day three, and I won't repeat them here. Now, there certainly are poster children that we can maybe feel good about even and identify as racist. This is from the Southern Poverty Law Center. They're tracking hate groups. So in 2000, the Southern Poverty Law Center tracked 599 hate groups active in the U.S. But in 2018, over 1,000.
Oh.
Now, what's important about this map, not all of these are related to white nationalism or Ku Klux Klan or Nazis. There's various kinds of hate groups. They're proliferating and numerous. But I think it's really important. I heard that one person had commented about, you know, racists being only in the South. And I think we really have to disabuse ourselves. Speaking as a Chicagoan, as a woman who's always grown up in the Midwest and Northern United States. So, for example, in the terms of neo-Nazi groups, that's where they're located, a lot of northern states and western. and 51 active Ku Klux Klan. So certainly these are ones that we can quickly identify as having some problems with racism. But I guess what I would like to say is that I think we still need to dig a bit deeper. We can't let ourselves off the hook. And I know that there was one person here yesterday saying that they really weren't wild about using the term racist or racism, that it's a conversation stopper, that it can be used kind of as a label that shuts down conversation.
A weapon.
I think certainly it can happen, and there are times when maybe it's more effective than others, but I really am very much against tossing it out. I really think that we need to define it. We need to not speak it in the name of kind of hot anger as a way to just make someone feel shame, but I think we can't sidestep it either. So we do need to define it. Dr. Ibram Kendi from American University put it recently this way in an interview on NPR. Racist is a descriptive term. It identifies somebody based on what they are saying and doing. If you're saying something that is racist, if you are supporting policies that are racist, then you are being racist. But there's really an important message underneath what he's getting at here. The good news is that racism is not a bone. It's not a bone you have or don't have. It's not an organ. And it does not have to be an essential part of your character that overdefines your whole identity. Yesterday, I think I even ended with the idea that being white should neither overdefine nor underdefine who we are. And that's an idea from Jennifer Harvey's book, Raising White Kids. So the key to all of this is that our concrete decisions and actions matter a great deal in terms of building a healthier, not ever going to be perfectly healthy, but a healthier white identity, given that we do live in a racially unjust society. So Kendi explains it this way. How do I know that it's not a bone, it's not an organic organ? Well, in the same speech, in the same paragraph of the same speech, people will say things that are both racist and anti-racist. You have people who support both racist and anti-racist policies. He was referring specifically to comments that Joe Biden had made and people being ambivalent about Joe Biden. Anti-racists support policies that yield racial equity. Racists do nothing in the face of racist policies that are creating and reproducing racial inequity. A racist, then, is someone who's actively supporting racially unjust policies, but it's also someone who is actively saying and doing nothing, who's just sitting on the sidelines. So another way to define it, then, and this is what Michael and Mark did with us a few days ago, prejudice plus power. And I would just delineate that more, and I think they also said this as well, that there are at least three levels. The individual levels, how we feel as individuals in our cars, walking down the street, in classrooms and workplaces and churches and schools, volunteering, all of those kinds of things. In cultural ways, where some cultures are considered superior to others. And institutional, laws, policies, codes, rules that structure our common life. And these are economic, they are political, they are in terms of the criminal justice system, but they are also in terms of civil law. All kinds of ways that if we benefit from those laws and policies, we don't recognize that there's a problem. I'm thinking especially in housing, which we're going to be looking at in just a few moments. So Ijeoma Oluo, I asked if you had time to perhaps read a bit for her from her work today. And if you haven't, it's okay. It's a New York Times bestseller. It's So You Want to Talk About Race. She's from Seattle. She's an amazing author and speaker. Very, very readable. What she would put it to us is this way. Racism is any prejudice against someone, against someone or people because of their race, when those views are reinforced by systems of power. Racism, then, does not equal prejudice. No matter who you are, you can make assumptions, you can stereotype, you can have prejudice. That's part of being human, I think. I think that we can be more and more cognizant of the prejudices we have, and we can work on them, but that's not unique to white people, throughout time. But the difference is that if you are not in the same position of power to act in a discriminatory way, that's when prejudice becomes racism. When you have the power to enact laws, policies, impose certain things on others. So reverse racism is really an oxymoron, because we don't live in a structure in which communities of color have the same kinds of power mechanisms that can affect our lives on an everyday basis. It's just, yes, go ahead.
So, black person can be prejudiced.
Sure.
Against a white person.
Sure.
Or against whites in general.
Or, yep.
But cannot be racist against them, because they don't have the power to, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that racism is not the same thing as prejudice, because of the structural power dimension of racism.
Not that prejudice is great either.
No, it's all, we need to work on all this stuff. It can be very hard. And the ugly thing about white racism is that it has become very, very good at dividing people, so that various communities of color will have a lot of tension with one another and not take on the white system, factually making life more difficult for all of these different communities. So pitting African Americans against Latino migrants or immigrants in certain situations, or in other situations against Asian American and Pacific Islander folks. There's a lot of times that, and that's part of white supremacy, is to divide and conquer in that way. So, beyond scapegoats, racism and racial privilege, it's not just about them, whoever we want to identify as the problem. It's also about us. Our kids and neighborhoods, workplaces, healthcare systems, policing and legal systems, churches, assumptions and implicit biases that we carry with us. If we have time tomorrow, I'll explain a bit more about implicit bias. Our schools and education systems, our social networks, our government bodies, and our housing policies. These are all things I could illustrate with you, but we've chosen to do housing. But anybody work in healthcare or have a history of working in healthcare? So I'm just, if you want to take screenshots or whatever, these are some just examples of chronic stress and weathering effects on communities of color, infant and maternal mortality, provider bias and assumptions that negatively affect doctor or provider patient relationships. If you want to know more, you can just take some screenshots. Or you can come up afterwards and take a look at them, because that's an area that I work in a lot. Here's some other examples. A white male with a criminal record is 5% more likely to get a job over a man of color with a clean record.
Did you say twice as?
Five percent more likely to get a job.
5%, okay.
Yeah. Racial disparities in how the police use force. Police killed a disproportionate number of black people. So this top bar is the national population. Our US population is 13% black, 17% Hispanic, 63% white. All people killed by police in comparison, 31%, 12, and 52. And while not attacking. Unarmed victims of police killings are more likely to be minorities. Here's again the general population, all victims, unarmed victims. Minority in the darker columns.
3%. I don't understand the second bar. All people killed by police. Whites are 52%.
They're 63%.
We're 63% of the general population, but 52% of those who are killed by police. So if we were in a purely equal society that where things played out that you're proportionate, if I am 63% of the population, then 63% of people killed by police would also be white. If it were that kind of basic parity.
And only 13% would be killed.
Right.
Be black.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think somebody mentioned this in one of the sessions previously.
Yeah.
The talk is very different depending on what family. I mean, not that communities of color don't talk about sex in session, but it's like a conversation you have to have about police and how to act around police. So this I just love, and I have a better slide and I forgot to bring it at home, but I think even though we have the most diverse House of Congress right now, we need to still understand how white it is. So, okay, here's a little eighth grade civics lesson. How many seats are there in the U.S. House?
435.
435, thank you very much. Women of any race are still at over just over 100, right? So we should at least be 200 and some. And same is true for various racial ethnic minorities. I didn't bring the stats with me. But right now, Congress is still 90% white. Governors, 96% white. Top military advisors, 100% white. President, vice president are both white. The cabinet is 91% white right now. Who's deciding what we watch on TV? Who decides what news is going to be covered? Books are popular. Teachers, college professors, owners of sports teams. Disproportionately, vastly white. And then, as I've mentioned this statistic a couple of times, that black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die in labor and childbirth or from complications following. And every year, twice as many black infants born in the U.S. die before their first birthday than their white counterparts. Being pregnant is quite literally life-threatening. Serena Williams wrote about her story. She wasn't listened to. She had postpartum bleeding and almost her life was threatened. Yeah. ProPublica and NPR collected over 200 stories from black women about how they've been treated when they were needing care during their pregnancy. The young Florida mother-to-be whose breathing problems were blamed for obesity when in fact her lungs were filled with fluid and her heart was failing. The Arizona mother whose anesthesiologist assumed she smoked marijuana because of the way she did her hair. The Chicago area businesswoman with a high-risk pregnancy who was so upset at her doctor's attitude that she changed OBGYNs in her 7th month only to suffer a fatal postpartum stroke. Over and over, black women told the medical providers who equated being African-American with being poor, uneducated, non-compliant, and unworthy. So, have you seen this movie yet?
Yes.
Bryan Stevenson, it's a documentary about his life and work. Have you read Just Mercy?
Yes.
Yeah, got to if you haven't. Put it on your list. It's not on a handout. I forgot. So, his book is called Just Mercy. He has TED Talks. This is a new HBO documentary just out about his life and work. He also is the one who founded the Equal Justice Initiative, which works to get people off death row or to get retrials and when they have been sentenced without due cause or there's problems in how they were prosecuted. He also is one of the founders of the Legacy Museum and National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama, that is dedicated to telling the story of lynching in this country. He is phenomenal, and he's one of the best speakers I've ever heard. So get to know him, and you'll understand a whole lot more about the criminal justice system. Have we heard about this decision? Milliken versus Bradley, 5-4 decision back in 1974? All about busing. It basically ruled that cities don't have to bus. And what does that mean? Where are we now, 45 years later? Roughly 9 million children, nearly 1 in 5 public school students in the U.S., attend schools that are racially isolated and receive far less money than schools just a few miles away. Inequality is endemic in America's public schools, the eBuild report says, identifying nearly 1,000 school district borders where schools on one side receive at least 10% less money per student than schools on the other side, and where the racial makeup of the two sides' students varies by 25 percentage points or more. We'll talk about segregation in schools and public school funding a bit tomorrow, because that's one area for those of you like me who have a child where I think we really need to think about spheres of influence and the kinds of changes we might want to make. This has been covered a lot on NPR this summer. I'm going really quickly because it's time to watch the movie.
I don't understand how that's possible as I understand public school funding. Isn't it based on...
Property taxes?
Oh, yeah. It is based on property taxes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. White flight, going out to the suburbs.
So in the same district, or not in the same district?
Yeah, like in Chicago public schools. Still, it's all based on... My school that's closest to where we live, it's so much underfunded compared to where my son... I will tell you the story tomorrow about where my son goes to school.
It was an interesting podcast on Throughline.
Yeah.
Our podcast.
Thanks.
On this decision.
Yeah, thank you. It's really fascinating, for sure. There's a lot more that could be said. So what my point is that there are varied and steep costs of racism that we as white people do not bear the brunt of. We are not living with this kind of stress and these realities. So when people of color take the risk of talking to us about it, we darn well better listen. We need to stop asking them to prove and justify. The evidence is clear that racism is systemic, endemic, pervasive. It's time to start believing people and then saying, what can I do to be an ally? And taking some steps to educate ourselves. So now let's watch the film, okay? I know that was quick, but I wanted to at least give you some sense of the scope and breadth of what we're talking about here. But I think the story of housing is a fascinating one. So let me get the video started. Do we want to hit the lights there, maybe? And that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. What can we do, strategies. And I'm sorry I didn't leave more time for conversation. We can take a few minutes now and, of course, talk at dinner. Thoughts? Do you want a couple of minutes just to talk to a neighbor? No? Okay. So, no neighbor talk. I just wanted to update the statistic. This is from the Washington Post from 2017. White families have now nearly 10 times the net worth of black families, and the gap is still growing. I have these other articles that I can pass around on some of the other inequities that I mentioned. And related to schools and such. So, thoughts about the film? Comments?
It makes you kind of sick.
Yeah. And maybe that's a good thing in some ways. We don't want to stay there, but there's something problematic if we aren't affected by this. There's something wrong with our moral psyche and consciousness if this doesn't have an effect. Other thoughts? Yes, go ahead.
There's still houses in the United States that have in their deed that it can't be sold to black people, correct? And in Minneapolis,
In Spokane, they have HOH rules that say, and they're still on the books right now, even as we speak, in Spokane.
I think what's a great project is to go back home to where we live and do more research about our locales. And really, this has given us an example of some things in the Northeast, but we can do a really close study, and there are resources wherever we live for our own neighborhoods and towns. And this is just a related news article on housing. Yes, go ahead, G.
So, you do that close study, you find out what's happening, and then you work to get those laws off the books, because my guess is most people don't recognize that those laws are still on the books.
Right. And I think this is where we have to decide, and this is what we're really dedicating tomorrow to, if you can come. Where is our passion and energy? Where do we feel most equipped? For some of us, it's going to be around children in schools. For others, it's going to be around healthcare. For others, it's going to be around the legal system or the criminal justice system, housing. It's going to work on building better community partnerships and community policing. The good thing about having this awful, monstrous, multi-headed hydra before us called racism is that there's a place to wherever you want to be can be helpful. Environmental racism. I would love it if we would focus on climate change and public health from the perspective of what's going on in communities of color. Flint water, Dakota Access Pipeline, in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast. You know, neighborhoods that are really on the front lines. Right here, Alaska, parts of California, Florida. And the rural farmers, too, and the migrant laborers. I mean, you know, on and on and on and on, right? Other thoughts? Yes, go ahead.
It's kind of embarrassing, but I don't know. Remember the last time I read the Constitution, but I decided to read the Constitution recently.
Yeah.
And I'm reading through it. It's frightening that these things could happen with, we still have the same constitution with some amendments, but the 14th Amendment said everyone gets equal treatment under the law, but my memory's wrong, but that was the late 1800s.
Yeah, Millikan in 1974 was a huge setback.
So then it's the federal Supreme Court that interprets the Constitution, and I'm thinking, I'm reading these words, and you can't do that.
Yeah, but we need you on the Supreme Court.
Go ahead. No, me.
Yes,
me.
You too.
I was just, my head is going down this path because it also happened in San Francisco and Seattle. It's very interesting now what's happening in Seattle is land prices are going so high, how gentrification now plays into this.
Right.
Where people, or in Tacoma, where they buy a hilltop and it goes from this really depressed to prime real estate, and how then that pushes people out, and they still can't get to the jobs because of the community. Yeah.
It's easier. It's great if you can do a deeper dive into racial redlining and urban renewal. And then urban renewal was a 24-year policy by the federal government. That basically, the first step was once you divested money from certain areas, you redlined them, then that meant that everything started looking run down. You couldn't get new loans for businesses and homes. And then that could be designated as blighted. And once it was designated as blighted, then chambers of commerce could repossess the land for a fraction, pennies on the dollar, and then redevelop it, and then they tore down what was there and did not put up more affordable housing. That ended. That 24-year policy of urban renewal under two housing acts did end after those 24 years, but in its place is exactly what you're saying. We already knew how to do it, so now you can use economic engines to do the same thing that what the laws did. So gentrification is a huge problem. It affects schools, it affects healthcare, it affects jobs, it affects pollution levels, sanitation, all of this. Go ahead, Michael.
It's been helpful for me as I listen to the growing conversation about reparations to understand that it's not simply about reparations for slavery or reparations for Jim Crow, but about the massive loss of wealth. In all of these policies that really have continued up until recent times. It's not simply about stuff that happened a long time ago.
No, right.
And the statistic about average wealth in families exposes this massive, really, theft of wealth from black families over centuries.
Yeah. In schools, you see it, I did not get the same education, someone can argue as another person. So that's a lot. And this was done very quickly, but I hope it gives you a sense of what kind of work we can do and need to be doing. I will have failed in these sessions if you leave them thinking, well, no, these are more things that I want to read and study and talk about with a few people. If it doesn't go to another step of you really envisioning some steps you can take in your own lives and places of life. This is not just a theoretical thing that we need to think about. Yes, we need to think about it, but I really hope you'll come back if you're able tomorrow, because we're going to use a bit of really, talking's great, but what else can I do? I'm going to be working from a chapter from this, from Ijoma Oluo, also from the work of Jennifer Harvey. What does resistance look like? There's off-prints there, but also her very short article for white women who need to learn calculus while the school building is on fire. We're going to use some of that, their suggestions, but then we're really going to map together some commitments and strategies for you in your own places that you can take with you. So the work is incomplete if we just learn about it and it doesn't transform something about our lives and actions. All right, well, so tomorrow, please bring a pen and paper with you if at all possible. There are a couple of readings if you want to do them, but don't worry if you don't have time because we'll do it a lot together. And again, there, feel free to take snapshots of any articles. And if you didn't get a resource sheet, it's right here, as well as that self-inventory from Janet Helms that we discussed yesterday, if you wanted to do it. Thank you for your thought, attention, and time. See you tomorrow.